Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today is Thursday, June the 14th, 2001. In the fireside room this afternoon is Eunice Scarf. Today's session number is 2001-3, and it's entitled Naming Your Story, a writing workshop for everyone. This session, Writing to Record and Preserve. Let's listen in.
Thinking today, and you could call this reading for spiritual, reading for restoration of the spirit, and writing to restore the spirit. They go hand in hand, to read and to write. And I think I want to ask you the question before we finish today is, what have you read that has sustained you? Do you mind coming into the circle? It's just easier. See, I've let you get away with it. I'll just look hopefully at you. The question I'm going to ask after we start, you can think about it a little bit, is what have you read ever, at any time in your life, that has sustained or brought you across, carried you through something, in terms of a text, an imaginary text, a memoir, a literary text, a poet, a writer? Who is it that you read if you are looking for sustenance? Or a map, or a mirror? So I think I'm just going to leave that question hang, and then I want to talk to those who read last night and say thank you and ask what it was like to read. If you wish to answer, what was it like, the experience to read, hot off the press, your words? Or those of you who were there, what was it like to hear scraps of story, fragments from many different people? Any comments? We'll just take a few minutes.
It's good. I really enjoyed it. It's very moving. And it fits so well with music, with sound. It was just very beautiful.
Can I push you harder? Why was it moving? Can you come into the circle, please? He's the only one that gets away with it. There's a couple chairs around here. Do you mind saying, do you want to hazard a guess? Why was it moving?
There was lots of beautiful pictures that we saw. You know, people came to give us pictures of their ancestors, of their children. And people were very honest and open, especially the lady on her honeymoon. it took courage.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else, what was it like to hear or to do?
Many of them were the same, but some people put just enough that you knew something of why that person might be important to the reader. Mm-hmm. But either way, it was still a commentary on we're all community. Mm-hmm. We're all tied together. And we can pray for them whether we know them more than a name or just that.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else? Can you come in, if you don't mind? We're a circle. I'm not at the front here. Still looking at them.
I think when I hear the names and ancestors mixed with names from the Bible, it becomes even more clear to me that it's an ongoing story, that our faith is alive and that the stories continue, and it doesn't have to stop with what was written there, but it's alive.
Okay, but it's an ongoing story, but it's a matter of community. In some ways, you said there was, some were just names, but other times it was like a telegram. One line is, you can pack a lot in a line, relative to who, when, where, what, why. So you heard telegrams of people's stories, or ancestors' stories. Anyone else who read or who heard?
So he had engendered some good conversations afterwards, so that was nice.
Okay. Good.
As a reader, it was a little it was a little scary to share your what you've written with that many people all at once.
Mm-hmm.
And another thought was that I was hoping that there was enough there and a clarity there and a subject that you could connect with some people and their own experience out there. And I thought maybe that would be true from some references. That's another thought that people can relate to in their own family.
Okay, so that in attempting to make your story enough to bring other people's experience to meet. And common denominators in yours were those who came across the ocean, those who settled, those who lost several generations. That is a one master narrative that one that many can participate in or can use to plug in their own story, see reflected their own story. I think the larger question I'm asking is, what's the point of listening to each other's stories? So those of you who tell and those of you who hear, what effect does it have? What effect does it have? What importance is there? Was it just that we were entering this into what sounded like an invocation and prayer last night, and hence it's proper and appropriate in Vespers to pray for one's people? You could just say, bless us all, and we could have gotten out early.
It sure is a window on people's lives. And we get to see a very small glimpse of something about each of the leaders that was obviously very important to them, really moved them to the right. And I had a feeling of more intimacy. I get to see a different side of these people who are reading these stories. I get to understand a different part of their story, a different aspect of who they are.
Thank you.
I think you could relate to some of their pains that they were sharing. Mm-hmm.
Common denominator?
I think everybody has a different unique story to share, and that we can each one from each person in a powerful way.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I come to Holden thinking Holden Village community, and then I just see Holden Village community, and then I hear one story and that person pulls out, and that's there by name then. And I hear another story at the dinner table, and then there's another name, and the rest are still Holden Village community. And then I hear another story and there's another name, and they become, has that happened to you? You know, there's this lump, and until they're known by name. All right, we'll leave that for now and just set it aside. That I ask always, it's part of my job, what's the function of story in making a community, in extending community, in letting new people into a community? Where's the place of story in including, establishing new community, maintaining community, strengthening community? And leave the question, because there's a lot to say, I can come back to it, but I'd like to write today, every time we come, I invite you to go into your own page and your own story and make text that reflects either what you've imagined or what you remember. First draft, rough draft, beginning, which you can take away to continue, or you can tuck away in your suitcase and never look at again. We've looked at how writing can be used this week, or we're looking at how writing can be used, what it can be used for. Of course, government reports and PhD theses, but that's not the kind of thing we're looking at. What do we do with text, with language that we use to remember out of experience, as opposed to footnoted knowledge? I came to write fiction when I could no longer handle footnotes. I was approaching a PhD, and I found it just formidable to be expected to footnote everything that had come before the subject I was doing, summarize it, critique it, analyze it, memorize it, record it, and then do new material, but not before I footnoted everything that had come before. And I threw up my hands and thought, if I write fiction, I don't have to do footnotes. Because you are writing out of experience and imagination, and no one can challenge either one of those. They can dislike it. They cannot respond.
they can shut, you can hear the stories last night and say, that's your memory, I don't, you know, I don't want to listen and put enough stories today, I've had enough words, but no one can challenge your experience, what I've seen with my eyes and heard with my ears. And that is the privilege of going onto the page with your own experience and your own imagination. So we've talked about writing in order to remember, writing out of memory, and how shifting the sounds of memory are, and how everyone who's been the same place at the same time nevertheless has a different version, or doesn't that happen in your family? If you all wrote Last Christmas, would it come out looking the same, all of you who were there? That memory gives everyone a different version. We've talked about using text, writing, to imagine, to invent, to lie a lot. I will make it up. And of course, in some traditions, it's been forbidden and disallowed in some religious traditions to do the invented. It was lying. I have Mennonite friends who still remember growing up, or the effect of the elders in their community suspicious of invented stories because they aren't true. So what good are they? It does not fail to influence some of the attitudes towards text and publication and reading that we still encounter. Today we're going to talk about writing to record and preserve, to leave a trace, the privilege you have of leaving a record that is not dangerous, you're likely not going to be jailed, you're not going to be listed on Amnesty International writers who are jailed for saying what they believe, what they think. To the best of my knowledge, I know no writer in North America, in my acquaintance, or someone I read, who is incarcerated because they have recorded or remembered. And you know there are those elsewhere who don't have that privilege. We have the freedom of the page. So given that freedom, given that privilege, what are you going to choose to record and preserve? What matters to you? I want to make reference to a book that I found quite remarkable, and it's by Ruth Raymond. I put her name on the board, R-A-H-M-A-N-N, and the text is The Man in the Pulpit, Questions for a Father. And Ruth Raymond is a novelist who grew up under Hitler's regime. She was probably 8 or 9 in 1942 and 1943, I believe, when this opens. She's a novelist, and it wasn't until the mid-70s that she said, I have to write this book. I was there, I have watched and heard history's account, and I lived in a parsonage, and my father was a stern, as it says in the cover, stern, imposing Lutheran minister, and she makes a long discussion of the different strains of Lutheran teaching and practice. And Erlander, I think next week, is going to be doing what he did last year, which is going through the Confessing Church and the Reformation, not Reformation, but World War II. So, in the 1970s, 25 years, quarter century afterwards, she says, I'm going back. And she does an autobiographical novel. I don't even know why they call it a novel. I think it's because of the structure, the way she designs it. Novels have certain form, where we begin and how we flash back and how we move forward. There are structures. You can begin at the beginning and go right through. You can begin at the end and flash back. I think that's the only reason they call this a novel. It's certainly not because it's invented or fiction, because she's going back into memory. And she goes and searches out the schoolmaster and asks and asks and asks, and eventually he says, I don't think you want to know. That's also part of the novel, to build up tension, because eventually he says, yes, now I will tell you. She asks about a particular night, particular incidents, her father's, how much her father knew. He's dead now. I guess my question to you is, or one question I want to raise, and we're just going to talk about this a little bit, I'm using this as one example of writing in order to record, to preserve the record. Why did she write this? Why bother? Why stir this up? I know my father would say, why go into that? It's over. That is one of the refrains I've heard from him many times in my life. You may have heard from someone in your family. Why go into that? It's over. Why go into this? It's over. So So any answers to that just to stir the question of why record? We don't all have stories of this degree of intensity or historical moment or pain as the daughter going into the story and having to unwrap it, choosing to unwrap it. But we've all got a story. Why do it? Any answers? There's no right answer. And then when we come up with the answers, we're just going to go right ahead and record today. Whatever answer there is, we're going to go ahead and do it anyway. I'm going to invite you to record something of your own history. But first, I can't help but ask why. Why bother? Particularly, let's say, using this as an example. Yes?
Well, I like to think of it as a spider web, that the central part of the web being where we begin and the outer web being where we get to, and the stories like the connective, you know, tissues in between. And sometimes our connective tissues get broken and need repair, or we forget, you know, how to, that there is this road from middle point to outer edge.
Okay.
So that's kind of how I think of it.
So that connections are maintained.
Connections are maintained.
Consequences, action and consequence, yeah. Moments in time and consequences of this. We see some historical connection as well as relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. Anyone else?
Well, by writing, it forces you to reflect on what's happened before. It forces you to reflect on your own story. And that obviously is going to have impact on the present and where you're going from here in the future. Mm-hmm. And so to take the time to reflect on, well, why did I do that? Why did I make that decision?
Mm-hmm.
How did I come to this point in my life? Sometimes have a big impact on going forward. If you don't have to take the time to reflect on it, then sometimes it's time to go blindly forward without
going. Okay, for one's own sake, then, a map. So that I draw a map of where I've been, where I am, and envision where I'm going. It becomes record, reflection in doing it.
I think to add to that, truth can be manufactured historically and within your family, where it can be told to you that one thing happened or another thing happened. And going back and reflecting is a chance to unpack, right, your perspective, your truth of what happened, which might not be the truth of those who were there with you or those who are studying it. And so it's really to get that personal perspective out and broaden the truth and what that is.
And the possibility exists that the version you were told is the one they want you to know,
right.
Want you to believe. There's a line from a text, I've told this story so often I've come to believe it myself, implying that it is invented, and if I tell it often enough, it will become the truth. The shifting sand of versions that exist within a community or culture. Tell me about the 60s in one line, two lines, three lines. Like, it's more than one version. Those of you who were there, not all of you lived through the nuances of that decade. Do you need more than one version? I think so. Another and another and another. Thank you. Any other reasons? Why record? And by record, I think more of document. Eyewitness accounts, or my opinion, or my assessment, or my summary, or my version, as opposed to invented literary story, which may or may not have any reference to lived experience.
We've watched a whole, over the last 10 years, a guy named Ken Burns has reinvented a mechanism of documentary. He's done it in baseball and Civil War, the West, a number of them. And he frequently goes back to diaries to create body and substance, the larger message of what he's trying to tell.
Okay, so he goes into the individual account, weaves it with a larger account, am I right?
And it's a whole style of documentary telling now. Seemingly it's changed.
I think personalizing a time and a place in history makes a huge difference.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, to me it would be greatly helpful to know, I don't know, how my parents or how my grandparents felt during World War II. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can read about what happened in World War II, but to have, if I had a diary of someone that talked about their emotions and how they were feeling and how it affected them, I think I could learn a lot more from it, and it would be much more real to me than just the facts. And I'd like to be able to do that for my family so that they can understand.
Go back to the question I asked at the beginning, what text took you across or brought you through? Or I'm going to add a second question, what text have you read that fits the kind we're talking about? That is a Raymond text. I will go back and unwrap the story of my father, not as blame, not as accusation, but as understanding. What one have you read? You said if you go into reflection in individual life, what have you read of personal memoir or reflection that has been of use or of interest to you? Take three or four, then we're going to start to write. Name names. You mentioned World War II, I think. Who's left? The diary. Anne Frank, small little girl, writing in a... Many others have come out. But what took the national, the world imagination was her youth, her record, her death. I suppose it's had more readership than anyone that came out in terms of diary or record. What have you read? Any period of interest to you? Yeah.
Well, Scott Peck's work has meant a lot to me as he's reflected on his life and dealt with developing the community.
And he includes his life story, his own.
Very much, yeah. That's why I thought of him. He's one of his books, In Search of Stones, is a real revelation of who he is in all of his vulnerability and weaknesses, which is interesting. It came after all the other books were showing his insight and strength, and then the last book showed that
vulnerability. And a very intimate awareness of the writer. It's not always happened in a novel. You're not really intimately connected with Dickens. If you read Tale of Two Cities, you're connected with the story, not the writer. In something like Scott Peck or any other memoir, you are invited into the life of the writer. Any other one or two?
C.S.
Lewis?
Grief Observed.
Grief Observed, all right. Yes, when he goes through the death of his spouse. How many of you have read Grief Observed? It's probably the most poignant one relative to death of a spouse that I know of. Another one? So he says, this is my story.
More the Little House, and they're not really memoirs, but they're about her life, and they really affected me as a child.
Someone else's life, another place in time, but we were both girls.
Yeah.
So it's girlhood being left out. Anyone else?
I was thinking of Dr. Tom Dooley, who was in Laos.
Okay.
In the 50s. I read that one as a very young child. Very bad.
If we were doing nothing but talking and not writing today, I'd ask the next question, which you can take away, is is there any text which caused you to turn a corner? Change. Single writer. A life story. Or a fiction. That caused you to do one thing and not another. Make one choice and not another. Seek one life and not another. And overriding all of this, my question is, what power does text have, if at all? Or is it just something we read for fun on the boat coming up to Holden? What is there power in story, and if so, what is it? And do you have access to use that? Not just to receive the power of story, if there is a power there, but to make it. I keep thinking of the book that I needed at 17. Couldn't find it. I found it at about 34. It would have changed it would have changed a decade for me had I found that book earlier. What is it for you? Is there one that has made a change? Changed your decisions. I want to write. I want you to write. I want us to write. It seems a teeter-totter. We talk about the power of story and we go and do it. You know, we don't have to just be recipients and buyers of books and readers of other people's texts. You've got your own words. I want to do about three things. If you haven't been here before, what I do is invite you to write. I read a prompt. You write whatever you like for 15 minutes, we hear as many as we can. So you get a beginning, and you can go away and write more, you can just leave it as it is, but you try something, a new voice, a new way of working. And the first, so I'm going to give you about four today. And I would write them each down and then pick any one you like to start yours. You can use the line I give you as your first line. And they are designed to stir either memory or imagination. Mostly we write from memory under situations like this, but you can write in somebody else's voice, which is a way of inventing. I can write in my mother's voice what the material I want to write. I can write in a daughter's voice. You can write in your own voice. What I want to start with, speaking of voice, is The Wife of Lot. This is written by the winner of the Nobel Prize. I should put her name on the board because I can't pronounce it, let alone spell it. The winner of the Nobel Prize about 4 years ago, a woman from Poland. And if anybody can pronounce this properly for me, I'd be very happy. Zimborska? Does that sound all right? The first name is like this, Leslawa. And the book this comes from is View with a Grain of Sand. And I open it up, and what do I find but a poem called Lot's Wife? We all know the story of Lot's wife. She looked back. That's it. Nothing more to say, right? She looked back. Oh, yes, there is. And she was turned into a pillar of salt. A, B. Her story finished. Right? It's lasted how many millennia? Two lines. You can find Lot's wife. If you want to cross-reference this, you can find it in almost every people's text is a reference to the wife of Lot. She's had this incredible effect on us. And two lines. Wife of Lot looked back, became a pillar of salt, end of story. So here, please listen. If there's another version, this is the wife of Lot talking. She gives a voice to her, because anyone whose story is told and doesn't tell it themselves is having a version told for them. Am I right? We have no idea what happened to it, what wife of Lot felt or thought or did. So when I read this, I'm inviting you to tell another version than the received version that might be in your family or your own experience or your own history that you've observed. You can also take a historical character, mythical, religious, literary, historical character, let them speak, and they can give another version to something. And that's a little bit complicated for your first if you haven't written like this before, but let's give it a try. Lot's wife. They say I looked back out of curiosity, but I could have had other reasons. I looked back mourning my silver bowl that I had to leave behind. They never say that. Or maybe I looked back while tying my sandal strap, so I wouldn't have to keep staring at the righteous nape of my husband Lot's neck. I looked back from the sudden conviction that if I dropped dead, he wouldn't so much as hesitate or worry. I looked back from the disobedience of the meek. I looked back checking for pursuers, struck by the silence there was, hoping God had changed his mind. Our two daughters were already vanishing over the hilltop. I felt old. I felt the futility of wandering. I looked back setting my bundle down. So is she giving version after version after version after version herself? Can you hear? She's saying, it could be this, it could be this, it could be this, it could be this. I'm not going to tell you. Try all of these on. I looked back because I didn't know where to set my foot. I looked back wanting to cry out to go home. I looked back in anger to savor the terrible fate. I looked back for all the reasons given above. I looked back involuntarily. I looked back. I couldn't breathe and spun round and round and round because of the fire. I couldn't help but look back as I spun. Anyone who saw me must have thought I was dancing. It's not inconceivable that my eyes were open, and it's possible I fell facing the city. And that's the end. In my mind, what Zimborska's doing is saying, how many versions are there? Have you ever even thought of her version, let alone the 20 she gives? And she herself says it's possible. The tentativity, the ambiguity of every story, it's possible. I mean, she was there, and she even says, it's possible I felt facing the city. If you like, retell a story that's absolute gospel truth in your family or in your experience, there is another version. There is another version. There is another version. Whose story? Could be yours, could be somebody else. character, you've received through text. All right, got a second line you can try today. And that is this line, only this line, those of us who. You have to write that down and look at it. Those of us who, write it down, Christopher, just sitting there. Just looking at it. Here, do you want paper? Those of us who. Those of us who. Those of us who. And then invite yourself, which community do you belong to? Who is the we you're going to talk about? Your profession, those of us who. Your gender, your age group, your family group, those of us who believe in God the Father Almighty, maker of heaven and earth. And you can just keep repeating those of us who. This comes from a Michael Ondaatje poem, the writer of English Patient. You can just keep repeating those of us who and keep describing that group which you've defined as the one you want to talk about. You all belong to a dozen different groups, do you know? Pick one. And you use one line at a time. It's a bit like what we did yesterday. Those of us who gather on Sunday morning. Let's say we're taking my Lutheran experience. Those of us who gather on Sunday morning. Those who go to the communion and drink the bread and the wine. Those of us who pray, not on our knees but standing up. Those of us who. So pick any community. Start with those of us who and see how far you get. It's kind of fun. You don't have to make story. You're just making list. This characterizes us. This describes my group. All right, I want to give you one more. And this is using metaphor, and you'll either like this or you won't. You know, you're getting three choices. So if you don't like this one, don't worry about it. This is Lisa Mueller. Can I just spell her name for you? L-I-S-E-L. And her last name, M-U-E-L-L-E-R. Lisa Mueller. And she's comparing herself to many different things in an attempt to leave a record. It's all in metaphor. You'll see. Very short. Listen how she works, and you might want to try this. It goes like this. Among rocks, I am the loose one. Among arrows, I am the heart of the arrow. Among daughters, I am the recluse. Among sons, I am the one who dies young. Among answers, I am the question. Between lovers, I am the sword. Among scars, I am the fresh wound. Among confetti, I am the black flag. Among shoes, I am the one with the pebble. Among days, I am the one that never comes. Among the bones you find on the beach, the one that sings was mine. That's very dense. She says nothing about time, place, name, people. Yesterday we talked about put in the details. She says, no, I'm just going into metaphor. I'll just repeat a few of them, because if this one, among daughters, I am the recluse, speaks to you, you can write about being a daughter in your family and what that's like. Do you understand? You can just use that as your, like your title. I'm going to write about being a daughter in my family. I was the whatever kind you were. There's no assignment here, it's just what this stirs for you to write about. Let me just read it a few lines again. Among rocks, I am the loose one. Among daughters, I am the recluse. Among sons, I am the one who dies young. Among answers, I am always the question. Among shoes, I am the one with the pebble. Do you know anybody like that? The one who's the pebble in the shoe? Among days, the one that never comes. Among the bones you find on the beach, the one that sings was mine. If this opens up story, use it and move in there. Anybody still need help? Are you ready to write? Those of you who were here before had this one. This is very easy. These get more and more difficult. The church of my childhood was small, but the experience was huge. All right, anybody who hasn't yet found what they want to do, write about the church of your childhood, and now it's time to begin. You can pick any one of these. The main thing is to write. Get your 10, 12 minutes done, and then we'll listen to who wants to read. Do you need pens?